So, Carol, first of all, thank you so much. I know you have such a busy schedule, and it's really a great pleasure and honor to welcome you to the teleconference call this evening.
Thank you, Kim. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know Carol Boyce personally, let me give her a quick introduction. She's really one of the most important leaders we have in the homeopathic community. Carol was actually in the middle of a PhD at London University when she discovered the Life of Hahnemann on the library shelf. And I think this really prompted her to be very interested in homeopathy. And so she pursued an education and graduated from the College of Homeopathy in London, England, in 1985. Later that year, she went to Calcutta, India, and was part of the first Bengal Allen Medical Institute's international training program, where she worked with some of the oldest homeopaths and actually the oldest homeopathic hospital in the world. In 1987, she and her colleague Linda Shannon organized the Bengal Allen International Training Program and set up a nutritional support project for a homeopathic clinic in a Calcutta slum. 20 years later, this project still provides nutrition for malnourished children and employment for local women. Carol has taught homeopathy since her graduation, including thousands of people at acute workshops, a great many of whom have gone on to study professionally at the College of Homeopathy, where she was a core faculty member for 11 years. In the late 1980s, she was part of a team working with Miranda Castro on her patient management module. And for the last 16 years, she's specialized in patient management, and she's further worked on and developed Miranda's very impressive work. In March 1991, after the first Gulf War, she went to Baghdad, Iraq, with a backpack full of remedies. And there she taught groups of doctors in Baghdad's impressive medical city how to use homeopathy and how to integrate it with existing medical practices. In 1992, she co-founded and eventually became full-time director of the nonprofit Homeopathy for a Change, which was the forerunner of Homeopaths Without Borders UK, and set up a clinical teaching project in places such as diverse places such as Cairo, Honduras, and London. She also this set the stage for ongoing homeopathic training, the formation of the Egyptian Society of Homeopaths, and the acceptance of homeopathy by the Egyptian government. In 1996, Carol gave up her busy grassroots practice to relocate in Los Angeles and to complete a two-year certificate course in film at UCLA. Then she returned in 1999 to teaching as part of the core faculty of the American University of Complementary Medicine's homeopathy program. In 2000, she became the clinical supervisor for the AUCM's internship. And most recently, she's developed a 30-hour distance learning program, video program in philosophy for the AUCM's PhD homeopathy program. In 2002, she was made the executive director of Homeopaths Without Borders U.S. and taught in medical schools in Cuba. She's currently on the faculty of many of the main homeopathy schools in the U.S., and since 2004, she's been the director of education for the Homeopathic Symposium, which is a website which offers interactive online clinical training and video archives of cured cases. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that because it's an impressive project. And she's currently writing extensively about the politics of medicine and how they relate to homeopathy. She's been heavily involved in the campaign to save the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital and has published a number of has been published in a number of homeopathic journals. And in 2007, Carol has begun making a series of documentary films about homeopathy. So you can see that Carol is one of our real leaders in the homeopathic community. And everything that I just described, I think, only begins to touch the surface of the commitment and passion that Carol brings to homeopathy. It's always such a great honor and pleasure to converse with her. She brings the greatest level of integrity to everything she does for homeopathy. And as I said before, welcome, Carol. It's a great honor and pleasure to have you join us this evening.
Thanks, Kim. Is anyone still awake after that long? Oh, my God.
So, Carol, I'm very excited to have you on. And, you know, we first met, I think it was in Los Angeles, and I was kind of talking to you a little bit about the Homeopathic Symposium, which at that time I was involved with. And you got very excited about it, and from then, subsequent to that, you got really much more involved. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement with HS, what HS is all about, what you guys are doing?
Sure enough, and, You know, this is a warning for everybody out there. First of all, I find a book on a library shelf, and it completely redirects my life. And then I meet Kim at a conference. He drags me to Kinko's to show me this new website, and then I spend the next 4 years being the director of education. So be careful what you agree to go and see. It's just amazing how life, you know, intervenes. The symposium, I started off, we went to Kinko's and Kim showed it to me, and I was just blown away by the potential of it to provide the kind of thing that actually is missing in homeopathy to a large degree. I mean, we're at a stage where we really need to expand very quickly. We need to train a lot more homeopaths a lot more quickly, and the challenge of training homeopaths is always, what do we do about clinical training? And here is a website which offers, you know, interactive video cases. So you can get a certain amount of clinical training sitting in your pajamas at your desk at home, which is phenomenal. And the whole idea is that you can stop and rewind the patient and really pay attention to what the homeopath says, then go back and replay the patient again. You know, it's not the same as being in a clinic, but it offers a whole other level of learning and training that I think is so valuable. And, you know, in the 20-odd years that I've been teaching homeopathy, the biggest challenge is always clinical experience, and it's not the same doing paper cases.
Sure,
actually
sure.
See, you know, there is the patient. Okay, it's on a video, it's not in the flesh, but you can see them, you can see the subtle nuances, you can watch their facial expressions, you know. I think it's second to none, and here's a little plug for the Homeopathic Symposium. If you haven't checked it out, you should just go and see it. They have a case that you can try for free.
You know, Carol, every single person that I know of who's tried out the site has been blown away by the quality of the videos.
Absolutely.
And the level of interactivity that's involved. Could you just give us kind of just maybe a quick rundown and how they would sign up and what they would actually...
go to homeopathicsymposium.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a home page where you can see what we offer. It's a free registration. They do ask you some information. Mostly you just need an email address, really. And then once you're registered, the registrations come to, well, in this case, me, let's say, and we would validate who you are. So you have to be a bona fide homeopath, a homeopath in training, a medical student, naturopath, naturopathic student, that kind of thing. We have a huge commitment to confidentiality of the patients because they're real cases. They're patients who did so well on homeopathy, they wanted to help in any way they could to promote this amazing therapy. So they agreed to have their cases hosted on the symposium. We do enormous amounts. I mean, we take a 12-hour case and edit it down to an hour and a half. So it's hugely time-consuming on the production end of it. But then once it's done, of course, it's done. And once you've been approved, we might write to your school and say, is this person really who they say they are? You can peruse the site. You can watch the previews. You can see what the cases are about. And then if you like them, you can either pay-per-view or you can sign up for a subscription, which is way, 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 way cheaper. And if you're a student, you get further discounts.
And Carol, can you tell us a little bit, one of the things that most impressed me about the interactivity of the site is where you reviewed a whole case, and then at the very end, you can, repertorize it and even make suggestions. And I think this is always blows me away. Let's say you suggest calcarea carbonica, and let's say it's not the remedy, but it's, a reasonable choice. What kind of interaction might you experience?
Yeah, so when you've watched all the intake, which is divided up into short segments, there's a place where there's an entire transcript of a case, and you can cut and paste that if you want to. You can analyze it in any way you want. You can watch something called a themes assistant, which shows you how the homeopath solved the case, the kind of ideas that they had, the kind of routes that they took in their analysis. You can watch a repertorization video, which shows you the actual rubrics that were chosen, et cetera. And then you do your own analysis. I mean, to get the most out of this, you need to do the work yourself.
Right.
And I know students are always rushing to the answer, but really, you'll deprive yourself of a learning experience. So
sure.
Take the time to analyze it, work out your prescription, go to the prescription pad, punch in your prescription using the full description that's in Borica, because we have people who put abbreviations in there, and then the computer goes crazy and said, no, it's wrong. And then the student goes crazy because they know it's right. So put in the full name, and then you'll either be told, hey, that was great. Here are some of the other things that we thought of. Or, no, I'm sorry. Go back and try again. There's one where if it's really off the mark, Will Taylor comes on and has a good laugh and says, I can't believe you thought of that. Go back and try again. And then you can watch the differentials of all the closely related remedies and work out why they were not chosen and why the one that was chosen was chosen. And then you watch the follow-ups and find out what happened. And at the very end, you're given a quiz, multiple choice. And then if you pass that, when you pass that, because you're allowed to go back and review your answers, you can print out a certificate of completion, which can be used for hours towards the CHC exam, towards your CCH. Some schools use it as part of their curriculum, so you have to present that to your school as proof that you did the case. It's very intense.
Carol, I understand.
It takes about 5 hours.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, I'm saying it's very intense. It takes about 5 hours.
To go through one case?
To go through the case, but you can stop and bookmark it at any point, go and have dinner, come back and take it up again.
Now, I certainly see the value of something like this in terms of the education of the student and in terms of actually seeing really effectively cured cases in homeopathy. I know that one of the other purposes of the site was to actually document the efficacy of homeopathy through cured cases, and I'm curious, have you seen any type of response from the medical community or anything, now that you've got a whole number of documented cured cases using homeopathy?
You mean people who've seen those cases?
Yeah, I know that was one of the original intentions, and you've got, as you begin to expand your library of cured cases using homeopathy, I think it makes a very powerful argument for the efficacy of our science and art. And I'm just curious if there's been any acknowledgement or recognition of this outside the homeopathic community.
I don't know about it outside the homeopathic community. No,
okay.
I think a lot of it we've been preaching to the choir.
To the choir, that's interesting. So, this kind of segues into some of the other work you're doing, Carol. I know you've been a tremendous advocate for, trying to protect homeopathy. And I'm curious, the work that you're doing with documentaries and the work you did working in the L.A. Film School, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I left everything back in England thinking that I was moving out of homeopathy and into film, went to film school, always intending to do documentary films specifically about health and therefore specifically about homeopathy. Went to L.A., did the two-year course, came out, had a little soiree into Hollywood life, went for a job, was told that in order to get the job, I would have to have my integrity surgically removed. Quote. So I thought, okay, I will just do my own thing, and decided to go independent. And in the process of talking to some people in L.A., met some people at the American University of Complementary Medicine, and at the time they wanted somebody to do some homeopathic teaching. I, of course, said, no, and then immediately started teaching for them. Anybody who's on the call already knows that homeopathy, once you're in it, you can never get away, so...
Sure.
However hard you may try, and I ended up as one of their principal teachers, and then I ended up as their clinical supervisor for 5 years, and now I'm building their distance learning program. So full circle, I'm now making documentary film down here in Florida, 3,000 miles from L.A.
And I saw a little bit of the clip on the website of the film. It's specifically focusing on autism, is that correct?
This one is, we have a series in the making, but this particular one that I have up on the website, and the website's called savingalostgeneration.com, if anyone wants to go and check out what we're doing. It's a very rough edit there just to show you the kind of things that we're doing. But it came out partly because of my affinity with the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital, which is under enormous threat. Homeopathy in England is under immense pressure right now from a small group of people, but they're very powerful, vocal people. And it came out of some conversations that I had with some friends at the Royal London Hospital, and they were, talking about their autism cases, and I just thought, oh, my goodness, here's some amazing cases, amazing results, and in a way, it circumvents a lot of the problems that we have when we try to say what we do as homeopaths. Here's a, sure. You know, an established hospital, 100 and whatever it is, more than 150 years old, doing amazing work. Let's document it. And so that it kind of came out of that, just started as a very small thing, and now it's we're making it into a 30-minute standalone film, broadcast quality, which we, you know, are intending to push it to get picked up by at least PBS or some similar. In the process of that, we're going to use the footage to raise money for a clinical trial. The clinical trial, the protocol's written, everything's set, the players are all in place. We just need the money to run a clinical trial about homeopathy and autism. And on the back of that, film the bigger documentary, which is the documentary of the clinical trial. So, and we have some other projects in the works. One is vitiligo, where we have a whole series of children before and after photographs, you know, because the biggest issue that we have right now is it's only placebo.
Sure.
So I'm trying to choose conditions which, A, are either termed incurable by the medical profession, by the allopathic medical profession, or for which they have really very little to offer apart from very heavy drugging. And also, so that's one level, and the other level is it's very hard to assert placebo effect, for instance, in a small child with vitiligo.
Sure.
So
your first film you're completing essentially is the one on autism.
Yes.
And you expect that one to be finished when?
Going back to London in early summer to do what we hope is the last segment of filming.
Mm-hmm.
Then there'll be all the editing and all the, you know, cutaways and some. Well, it depends how many GPs we can get on camera at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would like it to be done by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And is it only going to be possible to watch this film perhaps on PBS, or are you going to make it available through maybe like the Homeopathic Symposium or?
Oh yeah, I'm going to put it everywhere I can get it.
You're going to put it everywhere.
Yes, and you know, the whole idea of film distribution, because when I first started talking about this to people in the television world, in the film world, they told me, well, and I know I've been told this many times in my life, that I was crazy, that it was impossible, that you would need hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to make a broadcast quality film, even of 30 minutes, that nobody would, nobody's going to show it, how you're going to get it distributed and all that. But, you know, that's the old school. With new technology and the internet, you can get the word out. And autism is a buzzword. Actually, the very first day I was filming this at the London Hospital was the very exact day that Jenny McCarthy went on television and said, hey, you know, this thing is reversible.
Right.
So interesting timing.
And I'm curious, with the autism video, will you have clips of the children with the autism or just interviews with the parents?
Well, there are on that 10-minute slice, the children are on there.
Oh, there are. Okay, so maybe I missed that.
Yeah, the children are on there, and the biggest challenge, okay, we have two major challenges. One is that parents of children with autism do not want to video their children beforehand. So there are very few parents with footage of the children before they went for homeopathic treatment. And secondly, the children who've done best, who now are not diagnosable at all, they have no label whatsoever, didn't want their children to be on the film because they were afraid of the stigma attached to it at school.
Because now they don't have the disease any longer, so they don't want to be associated with it on any
exactly,
level.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. Huh.
Yeah. So it's a challenge.
Mm. And then you said the second one is on vitiligo in children?
Yes.
And any other plans for other conditions or?
You know, there are some, and I know this sounds slightly paranoid, but you have to trust me. But I don't want to talk about it because
that's fine. I'm just curious because it sounds like you're doing some very exciting work.
Oh, the others are even more exciting. We think that's
are they?
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. But you know, we've taken such enormous. There's been such an enormous backlash in the UK and. We have to assume that every message board we post on, every discussion we have online is infiltrated. Well, I know for a fact that they are because I recognize the people who pipe up and the kind of things that they say.
Right.
So, you know, it's a, I'm not saying that anybody on this call is an infiltrator, but I'm just saying I've just learned to keep quiet about
it. Oh, no, and that's totally, in the environment that we're in, I think that's completely reasonable.
Yes.
Now, before you came to L.A. and started working in the film school, you were doing, you were quite active in the United Kingdom, doing a lot of different types of promotional work for homeopathy and nonprofit work. Can you tell us a little bit about the work you were doing there?
Yeah, actually, that all came out, again, God, these things that completely change your life that you have no idea when you're in the middle of doing it, was the trip that I made in my first year of practice. I went to India, to Calcutta, and to study with Subrata Banerjee at the Bengal Alam Medical Institute. And that first trip there was the most phenomenal because he had access to everything in a way that ensuing trips following that didn't have. But, yeah, we worked in the hospitals. We worked in rural clinics. We had access to just about anything. We studied with some of the oldest homeopaths on planet Earth, not just elderly, but I mean that these guys had been in practice for like 70 years.
These are guys who knew people like H.D. Allen and Kent and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable. I mean, it was you. I mean, I guess that's why you would want to, you know, kneel down and kiss their feet. They were just
for sure
unbelievably. And I mean, oh, I have to tell you, you sit in a clinic and there's 100 patients in a line waiting to see the homeopathic doctor, and he takes the case. The case is very short, and they do a completely different kind of prescribing in India, mostly, and it's partly because if you can have a curative action in 70 out of 100 people, then you're that's very effective. If you can only see 3 patients a day and you can cure 100 of them, you know, 100% of them, that's still only 3 patients. So they do a different kind of prescribing. It's a different kind of pathology that they have there. It's very fast. But, yeah, to sit in those clinics and have the homeopath say, okay, this case, you know, Borica, page 459, line 6. And then they quote the line verbatim. It's phenomenal. They do
Love
6
it.
Years of rote learning as,
right.
well, as well as their medical degree. I mean, it's just phenomenal, which means that they're very fast at keynote prescribing.
Right, sure.
And it certainly has its value there. I did enough in the rural clinics to know that. So anyway, so that was just the best place to be. They have a saying in Calcutta, if you throw a stone, you hit a homeopath. So you don't have to try and convince anybody. You know, the allopaths send their relatives and their incurable cases to the homeopath.
Right.
We worked with Dr. S.P. Day, and he's the one that all the homeopaths send their incurable cases to, so he's kind of the end of the line. And it's just phenomenal, the work that they do. Anyway, out there, I was inspired, and Linda and I started this little project in a Calcutta slum, and we started, actually, there was already a little clinic there, so we started a nutritional project because the children were getting good homeopathy, but they didn't have any food, so we, you know, there's a limit to what homeopathy can do. And then after that, I mean, my mind just got, I guess I'm like that, you know, I see one small thing, then I suddenly get this huge vision, and I saw this, the prospect of homeopathy, you know, spreading in lots of places. At that time, back then, really, homeopaths pretty much stayed at home in their clinic and didn't really go anywhere or do much more than that, you know? Not that I'm saying that's a bad thing, but there was a place that I felt that I could make a contribution, so.
Sure.
So that came from there. I went, I was interested, I've always been interested in the peace movement, so I actually went to Amman, Jordan, just before the first Gulf War, and I coordinated a peace camp there, which was obviously unsuccessful. So I came back, and after the Gulf War was over, I went to Iraq as a maverick, really. And talked to the doctors there. It was very amazing, just a really incredible experience. And then on my way back, I stopped in Cairo and I spoke to an ex-minister that I had got a contact for from one of the people who did my acute workshop back in England and then went on to train as a homeopath. And so that was my contact. And from there, you know, we started a whole training program in Cairo, and I went home and decided we had to make an organization. It wasn't enough just to have an odd project here and there. And that's when I started Homeopathy for a Change. Got a grant for £50,000 and you know, the rest is history, as they say.
That's fantastic. And Carol, what about your involvement with the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital? I know that they've been under quite a bit of attack lately, and I'm not sure that people in the United States really know what's going on in England right now or the impact that this could have on the rest of the global homeopathic community. But if you could address, since you've really been more involved with it than about anybody else that I know, could you kind of give us a rundown of what's been going on politically in the United Kingdom and what some people are doing to try to stop the momentum against homeopathy there?
Mm. Yes,
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a complicated question that I asked.
No, it's okay. It's just that there's another situation where I had a conversation with the people that I knew at the homeopathic hospital, and they told me that they were under serious threat. The threat being that, well, there's a background story to this. In 2005, The Lancet put out its, well, we call it the anti-homeopathy issue because it had a series of articles, the first one, and also an anti-homeopathy editorial called The End of Homeopathy, and in which they were, well, it was the Shang report, the Shang meta-analysis, really, which is at the back of all this. I'm sure everybody knows about it already.
Actually, so some people may not be aware of it, so why don't you give
okay,
a...
Okay, the Shang meta-analysis. Shang is a scientist, let's call him, a researcher who did a meta-analysis of all the studies done on homeopathy. And he concluded, he took 110 trials and concluded at the end of his meta-analysis that homeopathy was nothing more than placebo. And published it in The Lancet, and the British media ran with the ball. 110 studies prove homeopathy is just placebo. What was not brought out in the press release was the fact that actually only 8 trials out of those 110 had been used in the final analysis. And there are some excellent rebuttals. I mean, I've written extensively on this, so if anybody wants to email me about the references for this, please do. I can give my email address at the end.
Is it posted anywhere on a website or something where somebody could just go and look at it?
Not yet, but it will be soon.
Okay, and which website will that be posted, that information?
It'll probably, well, there'll be a link from Saving a Lost Generation. There'll be a link to the articles that I've written, and I'll be putting the articles that I've written on my website,
which I'm
building right now.
Okay, and in the interim, they could contact you?
Yeah, just send me an email.
And what email would they use?
They should send an email to Carol at somethingtosayproductions.com. I know it's a bit long, that.
Somethingtosayproductions?
Yeah, .com.
Okay, so Carol at somethingtosayproductions.com. Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, before I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. So there are some excellent rebuttals, you know, explaining that if they had chosen any other 8 studies out of the 110, it would have come out in favor of homeopathy. So this is what the anti-homeopathy brigade keep terming cherry-picking. This is actually cherry-picking of the highest order. So, you know, there's a whole... Shang is also the author of the study which brought about the removal of homeopathy from Swiss health insurance. Richard Horton, who's the editor of The Lancet, is openly anti-homeopathy. You know, the CEO of the company who owns The Lancet is a non-executive director of GlaxoSmithKline. You know, there are lots of reasons why this study, which was basically absolutely unscientific, it was biased. They didn't even say in the original version of the study which 8 homeopathic studies they'd use. They didn't even tell people which ones they'd use to come to this conclusion. So it was fatally flawed, but nonetheless, the media ran with it, and they're still running with it now. So that was 2005. At the same year, the World Health Organization report, which was very pro-homeopathy, oh, God, there's so many levels to this. Rankins, who's the chair of the Dutch Union of Quackery, and Ezard Ernst, who's the chair of complementary and alternative medicine in England, demanded that the World Health Organization report was withdrawn because it was too pro-homeopathy. And you know that report has been rewritten, but it's still not being published.
Mm.
One of the things it did say was that 500 million people in the world use homeopathy.
Wow.
And it's the fastest growing modality on planet Earth.
Mm.
You know, so we can take comfort from that. So this is held in 2006, then Sense About Science ran a sting where they basically, an undercover person went to homeopaths and asked them about what they should do about malaria. That was on BBC Newsnight, and it's kind of gone downhill ever since. And in the process, what's happened is that powerful medical professionals have written to the primary care trusts in England, and they're responsible for funding each health area, and told them, why are you funding National Health Homeopathy when it's been proven in the Lancet that it's only placebo, it's no better than placebo? And some of the primary care trusts, you know, ran scared, they're only people after all, and they decided to withdraw funding. In fact, there was a report in Pulse, which is the magazine for the doctors, in January, saying that more than 25% of primary care trusts have now withdrawn their funding for homeopathy, which
wow.
impacts, obviously, wow. the homeopathic hospital.
Wow.
So it is very interesting, and they're very clever about the way they did it, because they didn't do it purely on finances. They can't, because the budget for the hospitals is a drop in the ocean.
Mm.
So they did it, oh, well, you're funding placebo, and what an outrageous concept.
Wow.
So they're very, very vindictive. You know, even just this week, I just read what was in the British press this week. It's you can hardly imagine how they can get away with it. There's one here, and this is in the Telegraph. Growing skepticism about alternative medicine has emboldened opponents of homeopathy. This 200-year-old quackery is available on the NHS, but that may change as financial pressures mount and as respectable British homeopaths continue to turn a blind eye to the prescription of lethal homeopathic AIDS treatments by their maverick colleagues.
Sorry to laugh.
That is the level. I mean, the thing is, you and I implore anybody who happens to be listening to this, you have got to keep a sense of humor and perspective about all this. Otherwise, you're going to, you know, you'll have high blood pressure and apoplexy,
yeah.
and that'll be the end of you.
So, Carol, what impact is this having on homeopathy in Great Britain relative to the schools and the practitioners?
They're finding it tough.
Are they? Yeah.
They're finding it tough.
So, less people are willing to pursue an education in homeopathy, willing to go to a homeopathic practitioner. Is this the type of thing that's happening
well,
there?
Well, yeah. I mean, not everybody. Some practices are still doing fine. Other practices, especially new homeopaths, are finding it harder to build a practice.
Mm.
What is interesting is that the Society of Homeopaths and Alliance of Registered Homeopaths, etc., are increasing their membership exponentially because the homeopaths realize they are going to have to belong to some professional body.
Mm.
You know, so that's the upside of it.
That's a silver lining in this crisis.
Yes, and I think there is a silver lining in all this crisis, and that is that we need to take ourselves seriously.
Mm. And Carol, do you feel that this, because obviously there's a lot more going on, a lot more attacks happening in the United Kingdom than there are, for example, in other parts of Europe and the United States, but what do you see this as a trend that might start to, we might just start seeing in other countries as well? Or
I do. I do, and I'll tell you why. Because the trend is not just homeopathy. I mean, homeopathy is the easy option from their point of view because they just tell you, you know, oh, yes, that's the one. You put a drop in the Atlantic Ocean and then you take a, you know, in New York and you take a drop out in England and give it to your patient and they'll improve. So they're fixated on Avogadro's number and the dilution.
Right, right.
And so it's easy to throw ridicule. But the fact is that all complementary and alternative medicine is under attack right now. And I think it's amusing that the only way that they can persuade the public not to run to us in droves, which they are doing, is to legislate against us. It's the only way they can stop the public.
Mm.
So
amazing,
that tells
it?
You something. Hmm?
It's really amazing, isn't it?
It is really amazing, and I think we just need to keep our head in all of this. There's a thing going on in England right now called the Codex Alimentarius, which is
sure.
A whole series of legislations about food products, drugs, you know, and it includes the herbal preparations, nutritional supplements. They're going through them one by one, and they're doing it from something called, it's about risk proportion, what is it called? It's about risk assessment, basically. I won't go into the whole ins and outs of it.
Right.
But yeah, if you can't prove it's completely safe, if there's any doubt that it's not completely safe, then it becomes, you know, something that should be only prescribed by a medical doctor, if at all. Vitamins should be produced by the pharmaceutical industry, synthetic
right.
versions, because then they can be standardized. You know,
right.
those kind of ideas. And that whole thing is tied to the World Trade Organization, so for sure it's coming here.
Mm. Carol, did you have a chance to see the debate that was conducted by the University of Connecticut, where they had advocates for homeopathy and then
I saw some of it, but I'm on a Mac, and they made it very difficult to watch.
Oh, okay, because that was fabulous. And, you know, my impression was that if you really came to that debate as an unprejudiced observer, you would definitely walk away feeling that homeopathy had clearly won the argument in the debate.
Absolutely. But here's the thing, though, Kim. It's not about scientific evidence. Because
they have an a priori mindset and another agenda altogether.
Another agenda altogether. And anybody who's interested in that should read something. You can Google this. Find it really easy on Google. Something called Zen and the Art of Debunking. It's a really lovely little article. And that's exactly what you're up against right now, because there's no such thing as independent science anymore.
Right.
Science as a thing itself should be unbiased, unemotional, and you should come to any question of science as a beginner who knows nothing.
Sure.
And take it from there. But what you have are people with vested interest now in science. I mean, the UK government has just done this amazing thing, which is opened all these departments in the universities for industry. So industry is actually in the university now working with the researchers. And how you get independent science out of that, I have no idea.
Sure.
But then again, these are just people with mortgages and families, you know.
Sure.
So,
yes, it's unfortunate when scientism is replaces the scientific method, you know.
Exactly right.
Religion of science is as opposed to just the pure method itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. Now, you, unlike almost anybody else I know, have been very proactive for fighting and standing up for homeopathy and this wonderful science. And can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, because you have been, you know, you haven't just been sitting back and just watching it happen and then even reacting to it. You've been actively going out there and doing this various thing. So can you tell us a little bit about your activities right now around what's going on?
Well, I think activities would be filmmaking, would be writing articles, would be talking to people. Actually, I'm writing an article right now which will be published in the California Homeopath. And the focus of that whole journal, this next edition, will be the focus on the future of homeopathy. So that if you want to find out more about that, be an interesting place, not just about what I think, but what lots of other homeopaths think about the future and where it's going from here.
Mm.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I think there has never been a more exciting time to be a homeopath.
Mm.
I really don't. Even with all this madness that's going on right now, you know, that age-old saying, quotation, whatever, that first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they vehemently oppose you.
You know you're touching a nerve of truth if they have to pay such attention to
you. Right, and then they accept you as obvious, which is, so we're right on that cusp right now, in my opinion, and we mustn't lose our nerve. You know, we mustn't be fearful. At the same time, we mustn't be naive either. But, you know, Hahnemann didn't have it easy.
No, he fought his whole life,
didn't he? So let's not be reactive, knee-jerk about it, but let's be proactive. Let's tell people what we do. Let's connect with the global homeopathic community. It's not just, you know, the few CCH members and the students or whatever. Let's say 500 million people. Let's talk to open-minded allopaths. Let's build bridges wherever we can, you know. Let's have homeopathy a complementary medicine, but let's have allopathy a complementary medicine. Let's have everybody complementary, depending on what the patient needs at the time.
Sure.
You know, let's get creative. Let's not put our head in the sand, and let's not try and hide either.
So, Carol, if there's somebody who's either listening live on today's session or listens to the recorded session at a later time, is there any advice you could give them? Let's say there's somebody who's really passionate about homeopathy. They want to know what they can do. Do you have contact information? And how could somebody support the movement towards educating people about homeopathy?
Well, they can do lots of things. They can email me, as we already said, at carol@somethingtosayproductions.com. They can go to our website, savingalostgeneration.com, and we're going to be posting some more stuff on there.
So it's Saving a Lost Generation, is that correct?
Saving a Lost Generation, yeah. The idea being that it's an epidemic of autism now, and there's a whole generation of children who won't be able to be independent. So, yeah, savingalostgeneration.com. You know, they should get in contact with the NCH. They should join their professional bodies. They should hook up locally. They should get creative, go on the web, join the message boards. I think, you know, they should just know that I know now I'm sounding like an evangelical
preacher. No.
But you know, the homeopathy has stood the test of time. It is based on truth. Our time is now. You know, all we have to do is keep on nerve.
Sure.
And I mean, health underpins everything. Everything you do is underpinned by health. So in my definition of health, is all about altruism, cooperation, and the ability to adapt to change. And that's exactly what's happening right now.
Mm.
Things are changing very fast. We have to cooperate, work together, and keep a sense of humor and perspective, you know?
Well, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think there's another valuable tool we have now, which is Dana Ullman just recently published a book on cultural heroes and homeopathy.
Right.
Yeah, have you seen that book, Carol?
I've seen parts of it. I haven't.
Yeah,
I can't afford to buy a copy.
It's the type
right
of work
now
that really could impact people, because, you know, people love their cultural heroes, and, you know, if this guy who was your hero used homeopathy, then you might say, well, you know, maybe there's something to this homeopathy. Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yep.
Well, you know, the work you have done is really, I'd like to give other people an opportunity to ask some questions, but I just have a couple more things I'd like to ask you. One is what some other people are doing in the community. You're doing a lot of work. I know there's other organizations out there like the Independent Order of Missionary Medicine. Could you tell us about them or any other organizations that might be also promoting and advocating homeopathy in the world today?
Yeah, actually, the Independent Order, I comes out of L.A. I mean, I had some meetings with them last year, and I agreed to help get their homeopathic, I forgot what the academy, I guess they call it, together. But really, that's just one example of different groups who are trying to get something global together, and not just global. Well, actually, one of them, the Global Organization of Natural Medicine, I think they call themselves, is trying to get everybody together on a global level. The Independent Order of Missionary Medicine is all about all the different CAMs, every different complementary and alternative therapy together to work together, because it affects all of us. And I think that's another, you know, another thing that homeopaths maybe have to think about is how, in a way, we isolate ourselves from the rest of the complementary and alternative world. We largely just do our own thing in our own way, quietly getting on with things, you know.
Sure.
So I think it is a time to collaborate, cooperate in every and any way you can.
And Carol, how do you see the issue of there being so much disagreement within the homeopathic community itself? I mean, because we have, you know, people who are really staunch advocates of a more classical or Hahnemanian approach to homeopathy, and then there's, you know, a whole school of people who are embracing some of the more contemporary approaches. And there seems to be quite a bit of division in the community about that. I mean, how do you see that whole situation?
I've just written a book review, which should be published in the American Homeopathist next edition about that very thing.
Oh, really? Oh, well, can you give us a little bit of a little insight into what that article is all about?
Well, I won't say anything about the book review because it's not come out yet. But,
okay.
But just talking about exactly that, you know, the different issues and how they fracture the homeopathic profession. Different people have different ideas about the way to do things. I think the fundamental thing in all of homeopathy is that whatever you do and whatever methodology you choose, at the end of the day, should be built on a bedrock of what I would call classical Hahnemanian philosophy, straight from the Organon.
Mm.
So whatever methodology you use to take a case or analyze that case, as long as you go back to that bedrock of the organon, you know, I think people will always have their different styles. And, you know, there was always the high prescribers, the low prescribers, you know, the Boninghausens, the Kents, whatevers. And they, I mean, the interesting thing in the old days is that they would discuss these things in a very respectful manner and agree to disagree or agree to agree. But, I mean, I think now people are taking up opposing factions and standoffs and impasse, and I think it's really a shame. I think we're talking about Sankaran's work. One of the dangers, I think, or the big issue that I have with it is that students might think it's an easy way out, not realizing that Sankaran and everyone in Bombay, you know, is built on a bedrock of philosophy. And
sure.
I think that homeopathic students need to know. And it's partly why I spent all that time recording 30 hours of lectures and editing them down with PowerPoints, because a student should know their way around the organon. They should know how to reference what they do in clinic back to the organon, because methods may change, etc., but the fundamental principles of homeopathy are exactly that, and they don't change, actually. So,
you know, the point that you made about in the old times, there was a certain, I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily true for every homeopath. You know, there were certain, like, practitioners like Lippe, for example, who tended to be fairly acerbic and, you know, would put off most people that he would come into contact with. But I think in general, you're right that, you know, if you look at the IHA transactions, you see that there was oftentimes a difference of opinion, but at the same time, people were willing to stay in dialogue with each other and actually have a conversation about the issues and not get emotionally reactive.
Exactly.
And this seems to be an issue in our community. I mean, like, there's almost no discourse or dialogue going on in the homeopathic community between the top level practitioners and educators, and
absolutely.
This to me seems to be a really big problem.
I think it's something that's really missing. I think people get their own little ways, and they do their, you know, and this is not meant to be disrespectful at all. They do their conferences. They have their followers, if you like, and they pretty much stay in their own small world. You know, at the end of the day, we're all homeopaths.
Sure.
And that's more important than a difference of method.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're going to advance ourselves as a science and an art, we really need to be able to have discourse and dialogue and criticism, as long as it's appropriate and constructive.
Yes,
and not, you know, an attack on somebody's personal character. I mean,
exactly.
This is the way that science advances itself. So I think that, you know, these discussions are really necessary and healthy. And
absolutely.
I get the sense that you feel pretty much the same way.
Yes, it's an evolving art and science, and it should be allowed to evolve. That's what Hahnemann was all about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, Carol, anything before I open it up to the other participants for them to ask some questions? Is there anything else you'd like to add about anything that you're doing, or give out any information on people, on how people can work with you or contribute in a certain way? Is there?
I think, yes. Send me an email and tell me what your interests are. You know, we're making these films right now, and we need help of all kinds. We have a wish list and skills, and, you know, obviously it's going to take some financing. There are many ways to do it. Ask me about references. You know, I'll do my best to help you. I'm all for collaboration.
Well, that's wonderful. And I just want to, before I open up, I want to personally thank you for all the efforts you've put into, you know, keeping homeopathy moving forward in a positive direction. It's a really great life's work, and I just want to acknowledge and thank you for it.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay, so I'm going to open it up and let some other people ask some questions. Hold on. Can people still hear me?
No.
Yes. Does anybody have any questions they'd like to ask Carol Boyce?
Can we get the email addresses?
Carol, the email address again?
It's Carol, C-A-R-O-L, at something... SOMETHING 2TO SAY productions.com.
Is that all without a period?
Yes, it's just one long string of letters, something to say productions.com. I tried to get some abbreviation, but they were all taken.
It's been years now since you've been find any short URL.
I know it.
That's a tough one.
Is there another email, or is that the only one?
It's probably the easiest. My personal email, well, it's business type email, is on the Whole Health Now website. I think it's on my biography, but it's Carol Boyce, B-O-Y-C-E, @ earthlink.net.
But does anybody have a question they'd like to ask?
Let me just say, Kim, sorry, the reason that I don't offer that email address first is because I get hundreds of emails in there every day, and unless you make it really clear what you want from me in the subject line, I may just delete you, because if I don't recognize your name, I might think you're just another spammer. So that's
reasonable.
So be make it very clear that it was after this call that you're writing to me.
Yeah.
Is there something that we can do to help the film, the autism film? Are there things that, are you looking for funding, or are you looking for support and contacts? What are you looking for in the film?
Yes, all of the above, actually. We are looking for some financing. You know, making broadcast quality film is expensive. We're looking for things. I'm making a wish list right now. And definitely we are looking for contacts. So anybody who has... we know people who may be in the world of autism, for instance, people who may be interested in helping fund a clinical trial, for instance, because they have a child who has been helped homeopathically. You know, those kind of ideas, it's anything like that would be
fantastic.
Did
you have a website for the film?
Yeah, that's savingalostgeneration.com.
And you can actually see... a rough edit of the video without the voiceovers and stuff, but you can get a sense of the caliber of work that Carol's doing.
It looks pretty grim, just because I had to compress it like crazy to get it on the internet. But
you still get a sense of the magnitude of the work you're doing. That's for sure.
Thanks. Yeah, there's all those black screens will be gone when we do the voiceover. Yeah, and we, you know, look for feedback on the film, so suggestions that you might have. Any way that anybody wants to be involved or try and help, I would love it.
Any other questions that anybody has for Carol about homeopathy in the world, homeopathy in the United Kingdom, how you can get involved in service projects? Carol's also, a very good homeopathic educator and practitioner as well, so she can answer questions on many different levels.
Would she have any... contributions about the clinical training she got in India, because it's always been very fascinating how rapidly the Indian doctors prescribe.
Yeah. I tell you, when you work in rural clinics, you get very fast. Very, very fast indeed. One of the problems that we had when we were working in rural Bengal is that we obviously, well, not obviously, but I can't speak Bengali. So I had a translator, and the first translator they gave me was actually a student of homeopathy, and it was an absolute disaster, because they would listen to the patient talking for maybe 5 minutes, and then they would give me a rubric.
Oh, no.
And so I had to, in the end, change to a translator who didn't know anything about homeopathy. It's kind of funny, but their clinical training that you can get in India is amazing. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate here, because it's a different kind of case, a different kind of person, different kind of expectations, etc. So I would say if you have an opportunity to do some clinical training in India, you should, because it's amazing and it's wonderful to be in an environment where homeopathy is absolutely accepted.
And Carol, your experience when these people would be seeing how many patients in an hour maybe?
Well, it would be 100 in a morning. So we would have about 5 minutes to take a case.
So you're seeing 20 cases in an hour or something like that? Or?
Give or take.
Yeah, or 10, 12 cases in an hour or something
like
that?
Yeah.
So, and what type of success would you see with 12 cases in an hour?
It's amazing, actually. Because, you know, the other thing is you're also treating people who are not, they're rural people, so they're not riddled with suppressive medicine and vaccination.
Mm.
They're largely a blank canvas in a way, so when you take their case, they do materia medica for you straight from the book.
Mm.
And you can get to the remedy, you know, you can get there in 5 minutes for a lot of those cases. We had some remarkable, remarkable cases come back a month later with complete resolution of, you know, lifelong conditions. And, of course, it's India, so you see all the pathology that you never see here anymore.
Yeah, actually, my friend David Kramer went to Nepal, and he said that it was the best homeopathic experience of his life, that just treating people in the rural areas was so easy.
Yes, absolutely.
And they just responded so quickly to homeopathy that it was a striking difference between his experience in
the West. Yeah, I totally support anywhere that I've practiced outside of, you know, Europe and America.
Right.
Did you see a lot of infectious disease?
Yes, I saw all kinds of acutes, a lot of acutes.
Yep. See a lot of venereal disease in India?
I did. I didn't treat any homeopathically myself, no. But I did spend several days in a venereal clinic, which was a real education. I have some slides, which if anybody ever wanted to see. You need a strong stomach. Because you never get access to that anymore, you know. You have to be in a place like that.
So, Carol, if somebody wanted to go and, because I, you know, I think it's a great idea to go and spend 2 or 3 or even longer months in India studying under these types of conditions. Is there a particular clinic you'd recommend for people to go to? Or?
You know, there are several. I believe that Dr. Banerjee still runs one in Calcutta. There's one in Bombay. There's one came through the mail the other day, actually. I'm looking now. I can't find the card for it. But, yeah, there's lots now. I would talk to probably the NCH has a list, no?
Yeah. I know that Dr. Farooq Master does one in Mumbai.
Yeah, he does one, yep.
Yeah. And the one that you did, is that still available? Is that still?
I believe so, yeah, a version of it anyway.
Uh-huh.
I can say yes, it is. Dr. Banerjee is still running it every winter, 3 weeks in January.
There you go.
Oh, are you a participant at the?
I travel to the UK to his school, and I've been going for the last 5 years.
Oh, great!
And I study with homeopathic doctors that come over from India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and they come to the UK for 3 weeks in July to study Western cultural prescribing.
Mm.
And so we sit in together. So homeopaths from North America, Europe, and from different countries sit in with homeopaths that come from Asia. So we're all together.
Fantastic. Hey, say hello to Subrata when you see him.
I will. I just sent my money for my summer school this year.
I did my best.
Yes. Really, really good to be with the homeopaths that see, you know, work in cancer hospitals, you know, and it's really, really interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, that sounds like you're really enjoying your experience. And do you go to India as well or just Great Britain?
Well, so far what I did, I've gone 5 years, but I did a 2-year program with advanced postgraduate in the UK, and I had to travel. I'm in Nova Scotia, Canada, and I had to travel 5 times a year for 2 years, and so that took my money.
Yeah,
so now that I've done that, and so now I go over for 2 to 3 weeks in the summer to be with the homeopathic doctors that come over from India,
excellent,
Pakistan, and next will be to go to India.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Great. Well, I see we're running close to just having a few seconds left. Does anybody have one final question that they'd like to ask to Carol Boyce before we end the call? Here's your opportunity.
Well, I was wondering, I have heard that Mexico and Guadalajara, Mexico, is the second place besides India that it's the best in homeopathy. Have you heard that?
I know they do have homeopathy in Mexico. I wouldn't like to say if it's the next best or not.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on what the criteria we
best
make an evaluation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And I don't think that would be true in terms of number of homeopaths.
Definitely not.
No, but I think there is some certainly very good education available in Mexico for homeopathy. I think
definitely.
That's certainly
yep.
I think so
definitely
too. Thank you.
Well, Carol, as always, it's a great pleasure, and it was really an honor to have you join us. Can everybody give a big thank you to Carol Boyce for a wonderful teleconference interview?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome, and thank you for staying on the call.
No, thank you, Carol.
And, just keep your heads, everybody. Keep smiling, and this is our time.
All righty. Thank you for all your wonderful energy you put into it.
No worries. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, bye, Carol.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.